Hey everyone, so welcome to episode 7 of the World in a Satin Bag podcast. I'm actually apparently doing this right in the middle of the Heat game, which is wonderful. So you all can make me miss whatever the heck is going on while I record this. So in any case, I'm just going to keep it fairly quiet in terms of this intro stuff, and I'm just going to dive right into the chapter. Chapter 7, The Council in Darkness. A few lanterns had been lit, and the little kind shadows danced across the wall. Screams still filtered into the room through the walls and door, but they were muffled and dim and dissipating. Sooner or later, the people of Arlen City would accept the moon's transformation, and they would enter their homes with their heads hung low in despair. "Is this all to do with me?" James said, leaning his head towards the window and the darkness beyond. Pee paced, his feet patting softly on the carpets. He made eye contact with the floor and pinched his chin in the palm of his hand. Gammon was leaned against the wall, his arms crossed and his eyes narrowed, glancing between the door and the pacing little kind. Why would this have anything to do with the boy? James saw the confusion spread across Gammon's face. The man only knew the lies P had told him at the gate. Silly lies, safe lies, not the kind of lies that might lead a city into darkness. P shot a furious glare in his direction, as if to say, "Keep your mouth shut." But the damage had already been done, the seeds of doubt and curiosity planted. "We have known one another for many years, have we not, Gammon?" Gammon uncrossed his arms. "We have, since the first Red Star winter." The little kind stared icicles at the guard. "And you are a good man? A man I can trust? A man who would do well by a friend in the most dire of circumstances?" The guard flicked his gaze at James, then back at the tiny man before him. He stood straight, peering down at his feet as if considering his words with extreme care. I am that kind of man." Hesitantly, Peace said, "I had hoped to keep secret the more, shall we say, concerning aspects of James's presence. But it seems my companion is both ignorant and prone to blurting out whatever comes to his mind." The little man sighed, shook his head, and continued, "James is not who you think he is. I did not know when we met at the gates, so I can say with confidence that our friendship was not compromised by a true lie. I honestly thought he was mad." Gammon's face scrunched into a curl, as if attempting to make a question mark. "Go on." James glanced at P, who turned to him and shrugged. "I come from another world." Gammon breathed in deep as if ready to laugh, but stopped stiff when P gave him a stern look. He stammered, staring back and forth between James and the little man. "If this is some sort of jest, would that it were." James furrowed his brow, thinking about Triska and what she was going through with the High Council. Then Gammon's gaze fell upon James. He turned away, afraid to make eye contact. The looks were going to take some getting used to. Everyone who learned the truth would give him that look, he knew. "I don't believe it. I mean, how?" "Old magic," P said. "Luthien." The little kind's voice grew stiff and weak when he said the name. James cleared his throat and told the story of what had happened to Laura once more, but he struggled with the words, finding it harder than before to talk about his friend and her fate. The night's events made matters worse, more dire. With each sentence, Gammon's face grew more concerned, exposing great lines around his mouth and forehead and sending a quiver into his eyes. "Are you marked?" Gammon's voice wavered. "Yes." The guard's eyes grew wide and he stepped away from the wall. Hurriedly, he said to P, "He can't stay here. He will bring Luthien down on us all." He slammed his fist against the wall with a loud thump. "Luthien would have to cross the Fire Rim and travel months with an army. Even if he could make that distance, his men would be tired and ready to flee. Besides," James said, "the Farland would know of his march long before his army reached Arlen City." "Precisely. And his supply lines would splinter at the Fire Rim, driven mad by the darkness or torn apart by Daemonkind. His army would follow suit, stalling at the farthest reaches of the Farthland. Even with proper planning, he could not arrive here for 6 months at least." "That doesn't stop his assassins and spies," Gammon hissed between his teeth. The room became heavy with Gammon's concern, which soon found its way into James, consuming him at the heart and working its way through his bones and muscles. He barely contained the shiver of fear that moved into his fingers and tickled his skin. He breathed and tried again. "He won't kill me. For whatever reason, he wants me alive." The lie stung his tongue as he said it, but it was all he could do to squash the fear within him, and the fear now plain in Gammon's eyes. The guard had too much to lose, a wife and a child and a city. The three of them were silent as their words hung over them. A wall of worries made its way into his thoughts. He had learned so much from the book P had given him, but it had not assuaged his doubts. With each moment, it became clearer to him that he might not be able to save Laura after all, that he couldn't save her. She was so far away, trapped in another part of the world, but she was alive. She had to be. Luthien must need her for something. Then his mind turned to his parents about what they were doing in his absence and how they were handling what had happened. He imagined them frantically trying to figure out how to get him home, to save him rather than Laura. That thought infuriated him until he remembered the man his Furl, had thrown into the trees in order to protect him. He couldn't be sure if the man had lived or not, but he knew the man's death would have made things difficult for his parents. The Furl shivered, pushing at his mind with warmth in an effort to calm his nerves and clear his head. It was like drinking a warm cup of cocoa, numbing the senses just enough to drive irrationality away. His doubt came and went, washed away as he pushed back against the tide of obstacles. I will save her. I must. A knock at the door broke the silence and shook all three of them from their thoughts. P scampered to the door and spent several moments arguing with the gruff-voiced person on the other side. Eventually, he gave in and returned to the room with Darl stomping behind. James sighed and rolled his eyes so delicately that Darl would have had to squint to see the motion. But he did so not because he disliked the man. Indifferent would better describe his feelings for Darl. Rather, he rolled his eyes because he knew that he would have to endure another long stare of bewilderment and fear once his story was retold to the room. But, to his surprise, Darl grumbled without so much as peering in his direction. It seems the city is full of strange omens these days. Old friends call upon my services, the sky becomes a haven for the below, and insolence still consumes the young. The old man, James realized, had the eyes of a bird of prey. I think in this instance, Peace started, James has greater concerns than rudeness. Darl's eyes brightened. And what might those be? He's been marked, Gammon blurted out. The old man frowned. I wish your face betrayed a lie. P let out a long breath. So much for secrets. Secrets are rarely worth keeping. P half-heartedly showed Darl to a seat. Who cares to fill an old man's mind with a story? Then P told Darl about James and Luthien and everything else, and, as James had anticipated, Darl's face narrowed with worry. The old man looked dead center into his face with his two blue points of glacial ice. I came to speak with Triska about the boy and instead received the shock of a lifetime. What next, Lifens? There was a long, uncomfortable silence. P's face became pale as the moon beneath his beard. The little kind clenched his fists and stiffened. James chewed his lip for a moment before saying, P mentioned that very word earlier. Darl and Gammon turned their attention to P, who seemed to fold under the pressure instantaneously, his face turning red and his little fists opening and closing rapidly. But just as the little man opened his mouth to speak, the door burst wide open and crashed against the wall with a thunderous boom. Four soldiers, clad in similar armor as Gammon, a long streak of red metal distinguishing their helms from those of the guards along the wall, stormed into the room. Triska and a black-robed figure followed, gliding behind them in one smooth motion. The soldiers positioned themselves around the room to block access to the various exits. Gammon snapped to attention while P and Darl mumbled curses or rose with teeth bared as if gravely insulted. Only James remained in his seat. One of the soldiers stomped the ground with his armored foot. A gold serpent clasp held his red and gold cloak in place, which James took to indicate his captain's rank. You four are to be brought to Brendan's Hall, by order of the High Council, the man said, his voice thick and full of experience. But first, the robed figure said, moving forward to James's side. He saw female hands appear from beneath the robe and heard the faint whisper of softness in her voice, which didn't make the situation any less threatening. She grabbed his arm and examined his Furl. An angry throb filled his mind. The Furl sensed something. He sensed something. This must come off. The woman tugged on the Furl, trying hard to untie the knot. In return, the Furl tightened until his veins pumped hard. I tried to tell you, Nora. It is bonded with him, Triska said. Her eyes were full of motherly love as she looked at James. Yes, but you also said that the laws of magic do not exist on his world. How can he be bonded to a Furl, and only after such a short time? Nora placed her hand a few inches above the Furl. A bolt of lightning shot from her hand and wrapped around the cloth. But James didn't move away. The throbbing boomed in the back of his head, and his vision suddenly became wobbly. An instant later, in a shockwave of energy burst from his Furl, shattering the lightning like glass and shoving Nora's hand away. She lurked backwards with the shock, cursing. Have you a voice yet, boy? A voice? That he hadn't read about. He knew of the length of time it took to bond with a Furl, and the unusual nature of his relationship with the cloth around his arm. But he had seen nothing about a voice in his book. Nora sneered, as if she knew something he did not. Come along, she said, spitting the words. We have business to attend to with the High Council. She ushered everyone out of the house. first the soldiers, then everyone else. James snatched up the rock Darl had told him to give to Triska on his way out and tucked away the etiquette book in his pants pocket. Nora walked hurriedly up the path, out of the courtyard, and up a long cobblestone road that ran along a hillside towards the towers. Long shadows filled every crevice of the city. Only a few places were lit where people either carried torches or had lit large fires. In that faint light, James could see people huddled close to each other, and soldiers walking in single file down roads and along the walls with torches lighting their way. The walk ended at the base of a wide stone building inlaid with marble carvings of serpents and Celtic designs in men, all part of some story that James did not have time to admire. A long row of equally spaced white pillars stood across the front, giving the impression of an ancient temple. Their colors were fading, and their faces were marked with stress fractures from thousands of years of bearing the weight of the roof. Wide open behind the central pillars was a set of wooden doors engraved with the same design as the gates of Arlen City. On either side of the door were two golden beasts built into the stone frame. They resembled men, but with serpent heads and avian legs which were drawn back as if in attack, talons gleaming in the faint light. And above this brilliant sight were the towers, Al-Dul and Nasra. James could easily see the glow of the Al-Dul-Pur, centered over the fall several hundred feet above. They traveled through the doors into a long hallway of similar white pillars, in which were carved detailed sceneries of battles, celebrations, and what looked like knighting ceremonies. Each pillar seemed to progress in timeline fashion, from age to age. The last two pillars, however, were bare. Spells of light had been cast above each pillar, which in turn dimly lit the hallway. Beyond these monumental pieces stood a long marble table speckled with obsidian shards, behind which sat a line of six figures on cushioned chairs, some dressed in robes, and others in soft tan shawls and off-white tunics and pants. Nora slipped away and took a seat behind the table, making the number of the High Council a total of seven. She removed the robe from around her head to reveal a face full of lines, but also a set of youthful brown eyes. The four soldiers stationed themselves around James P., Triska, Gammon, and Darl. Then, in a deep, raspy but still powerful voice, the central figure, an old man with silken waves of white hair and sunken eyes, spoke. "I'm Amund, Lord of this council. James, please step forward." James hesitated and looked to P. and Triska for guidance. They nodded slightly. He stepped forward, bowing low as per custom, and waited for Amund to acknowledge him. The old man bowed his head with a faint smile on his lips. "Your presence comes as a great surprise to all of us, as I am sure you are aware. Tell me of the place where you come from." And he did. He spoke of Woodtin and all that had happened there before he had come to the Farthland. He described the forests, roads, and the things he loved most about living there, learning and computers and books. His words soon became a ramble of information even he found hard to follow. Amund raised a wrinkly hand, and James became quiet. "You say that the races of our world are written in your stories." James nodded. "Yet it is a world without magic?" "Sometimes magic and fantasy are written into our histories. But they're old, and people don't believe what they say." "And still you are bound to a Firl." Amund's voice fell away, but James could not tell if it was because of the man's age or some other reason. "To the others," he said, "it may be that magic once existed on his world. Perhaps his people have simply forgotten, like the people of the Black Sands." Then, to James, the old man whispered, "We have sent word across the Farthland about your friend, in case she has found her way to our lands. A silly hope, I'm sure, but one worth pursuing if only to keep our minds busy." "If Luthien truly has her," the figure to the left of Amund said with more force, "then we must decide on a course of action that would best serve the High Council and the people of the Farthland." "With this turn of events," Nora waved her hand as if to point at the sky beyond the roof, "I think it best that, for now, we keep you within the Lord's hold, primarily as a guest, of course." Her last few words betrayed the woman's arrogance, as if she thought herself better than those that stood before her. James flexed his left hand and popped one of his knuckles. "I agree," Amund said, sighing. "You should be kept out of the general public until we can secure the Farthland." James nodded. He respected Amund. Perhaps it was the genuine way in which Amund addressed him, or the look of concern and caring that seemed to pour from the two brown eyes that were sunken amidst the wrinkles and aged skin. Either way lent a helping hand to Amund's position. Nora's attitude, however, suggested both her annoyance with James and her annoyance with Amund. She shifted uncomfortable in her seat and pursed her lips whenever Amund spoke, and when she looked at James, her eyes seemed to narrow and grow dark. "And, of course," Amund said, his eyes suddenly serious, "your friends must stay in the Lord's hold as well." At this, Daro cursed his contempt, glaring so hard that his face became a wall of shaking skin and muscle over his bared teeth. The effect soon fell away from his face, and he grumbled more curses to himself. P and Triske guffawed, but it was Gammon who took the anger in the room and crushed it, the concern plain upon his face. James slouched, aware of his part in severing the freedoms of his companions. "We can't risk the truth finding its way into the city. It would create chaos, and Luthien must not see Arlen City crumbling with fear. Until we know what to do, it is imperative that we keep James safe." Ammon clasped his hands together and said more sternly, "The moon is but one symptom of a far greater problem, but I will not have you suffer while you are kept behind the walls. Your family will be cared for, Gammon. Darl and Triske have no need to concern about their businesses, and P will, in time, find his way to the forests of Gaul, where, I'm sure, he will terrorize the population of pixies that make their homes there." Ammon tried an old man's smile. Even Darl seemed to melt under its warmth. Gammon's fears dropped from his face, but his shoulders still shook. "My lord, if I may make a suggestion," P said, dispelling the tension with a thin, bearded smile. "In the interest of protecting James, I suggest he be trained, not for a warrior's purpose, for he is but a boy, but rather so he might defend himself in the likely event that Luthien's assassins descend upon him in the night. He has a ferrule, true, but hasn't the knowledge or skill to properly use it, and he would do well to have his arms tempered by steel, and his mind attuned to the skills which befit his kind. Darl has kindly offered his service in that regard, but the sword has its limits." He bowed his head. James saw a faint grin on the little kind's face, having had the last word on Darl. He glanced at the old man, but Darl's face offered nothing beyond the contempt that was always there. Ammon nodded and formed a tiny smile on his lips. "Well said, P." Then, to the High Council, he said with more authority, "Are there any objections?" Nora tried to speak, but caught herself in Ammon's harsh gaze. "It seems you and your companions have taken the initiative, which is commendable. I will send for a mage guard." James bit his lip, wanting to blurt out that P had volunteered to teach him, but to refuse a High Council offer might be read as offensive. At least, that was what he had read. Such as it were, someone had to tell Ammon. The tension in the room grew. James glanced at P, but the little kind held his tongue. Finally, it was Triske who spoke up. "My lord, I'm afraid that we cannot accept your offer at this time. Pantiphilus has taken that position. We do, however, need a set of swords which we were unable to acquire before we were brought before you." "Consider it done." Ammon stood at an elderly man's pace, flinching with pain. He waved a weak arm in the direction of a door to the right side of the table. Bones popped. There was no avoiding the man's age. Ammon's cheeks hung from his face, overcome with wrinkles. "Please, let us guide you to your temporary accommodations." Then, with a smile, he said, "James, if you would be so kind as to walk beside me." James made his way to the side of the table, waiting patiently for Ammon's frail form to meet him. When the elderly man extended an arm, he took it and supported the council member down the steps and through the side door and into a hall. More soldiers were posted in the hall, two just inside the door and two more at the far end, where a second door, lit by shimmering bulbs of light, waited to be opened. P, Triske, Darl, and Gammon followed some distance behind as he and Ammon walked down the hall. "You must forgive Nora for her rude behavior. It's not often that her skills are challenged, especially by an untrained child such as yourself. You meant no offense, I'm sure, but it is common that we offend without intending to. Nora might be unpleasant at times, but I assure you that she is a competent leader when hard-pressed to defend her people." James opened the door and led Ammon into the long courtyard beyond. The towers flanked the stone walkway where fountains and gardens of golden hedges and azure flowers rested against the walls. Torches had been set up along the walls to provide light. He marveled at the design of the towers and their size. He had seen pictures of castles on earth, their towers, keeps, and gatehouses, but these were magnificent. Rising from the base of the courtyard, 600 feet high into the blackened sky and nearly 100 feet in diameter, the towers were smooth circles, almost perfect, connected by a thick stone bridge 3/4 of the way up. The bridge was supported by 2 half-arches that used the walls of the towers as abutments. Small arrow loops were evenly spaced 20 feet apart, vertically and horizontally, at each of the 8 directions. At the very top of each tower were 4 blunt spires, each in its own corner, and accompanied by short crenellated walls. "How old are these towers?" James said. "Much older, thankfully, than this old man by your side." Ammon grinned warmly. Several of his teeth were gone, leaving black spots in his smile. Many of the foundations that this city rests on were here when the first men came into the Farthland. It is believed that men once lived here, and that we have only forgotten the past. I see that as dangerous thinking. Why? If such stories are true, we could be doomed to repeat whatever mistakes have been made. Amund peered up at the towers, gripping James's arm tight. But we may never know. There is no written record, only ruins. The towers were built on the foundations of a ruined city, where two towers might have been many thousands of years before the first men arrived. They rebuilt what they could. Now Arland City has grown beyond its history, and many have forgotten the ruins the first men discovered. I am still reminded of what might have been. What do you think happened to the people before the first men? They picked up their belongings and left the city to crumble. But I can't say why they left. Only that the accounts of the first men say there were no bones, there were no graves or crypts. He shivered. What kind of people left no dead? Maybe they found a better place to live. Perhaps. Perhaps there was a war, he thought, a war which left no bodies behind. And, as if Amund could read his thoughts, the elderly man squeezed his arm and said, James, I fear that you may have brought a terrible doom upon us. I don't blame you, but I sense that your presence disrupts the peace. A great many things will happen soon. This is a very dark time for Treya, and it will only grow darker. Through it all, you must be kept safe. You must protect yourself. Darl and P, he paused. They'll help me, but I don't know if I can do it. You will because you must. You've been gifted with a Ferl. It possesses powerful magic. Few who are bloodless have such fortune. You will learn and train and find the courage, because you are special. No, he thought, there's nothing special about me, except that I come from another world. Amund had led them past the courtyard and towers to a castle guarded by armored men on the walls and in front of the portcullis. Four wall towers rose on the corners, and the spiked roof of a two-story keep was visible over the top of the crenellated walls. A soldier walked listlessly directly above the gate, a product, James guessed, from months or years of walking these walls without a single hint of activity. The soldiers at the gate laughed amongst themselves until Amund and James came into view. They instantly snapped to attention. "We have guests," Amund said. "Yes, my lord," one of the soldiers said after stepping forward. A small silver spine jutted from the front of his helm. He belted commands over the wall, after which the gate creaked, chains clinking from inside the wall as the portcullis lifted from the stone. James and Amund walked through the archway and were soon joined by the others inside the lord's hold. Once inside, James could see the full face of the keep. A tall stone structure with several glass windows, two of which had been stained with bright red and crimson, and flanked a metal-studded wood door. A well stuck out like a stone eyesore in the center of the ward. It had taken the builders of Lord's Hold a long time to dig that well, especially considering its closeness to the apex of the hill on which Arland City rested. The door to the keep opened with a thud, and a tall soldier, this one with two parallel spines of silver on his helm and a dark blue cloak flapping behind him, came out and greeted them. "My lord," the soldier said, bowing. "Captain Donis, these five require accommodations." "As you wish." "And if you could procure training blades," Amund trailed off. The soldier bowed gracefully. "The rumors are true, then?" Amund paused for a moment and then said, "They are." With that, the soldier guided the group to the keep. Amund placed a withered old hand on James's shoulder. "Stay safe," he said, with eyes full of kindness. Then he let James go, nodded, and left the lord's hold. James followed Donis and his companions into the keep. Within there were several rooms. The bottom floor served as a dining area, with two circular wood tables, several chairs, and a fireplace. The top floor contained six rooms furnished with beds of soft linen. They weren't nearly as comfortable as Triska's home, but they would send him to sleep just as well. He imagined that the soldiers on the walls would not sleep in such fine bedding, and that produced a tinge of guilt in his stomach. Shaking the feeling away, he took the central room facing the ward and portcullis as his own and dropped himself on the linen. It had been an exceptionally long day. He was exhausted and ready to tumble into sleep, to dream of bright moons and things as they were supposed to be. Then he closed his eyes and drifted away. And that is the end of Chapter 7. Something I've noticed while I'm doing this is that the chapters seem to get longer, so I may be splitting some chapters into pieces, possibly starting with Chapter 8 due to that chapter's length. It's 11 single-space pages, which is a lot. This one was long enough as it is at a little over 24 minutes, so Thanks for listening. If you'd like to donate, you can do that in a number of ways. You can just go straight to my blog, wisb.blogspot.com, and you can just use the little chip-in thing on the sidebar. Or you can just send it straight to my PayPal email, which is arconna@yahoo.com. So thanks everyone who's donated so far. Don't forget that there's free stuff if you donate. So I will see you all tomorrow with Chapter 8.